This is KNX In Depth, an hour each day when we dig deeper, ask more questions, tell you how the major stories of the day impact you. Sponsored by your Southern California BMW centers. I'm Mike Simpson along with Charles Feldman.
He is not a liar. That's what Attorney General Jeff Sessions told a House committee today, saying he has not misled Congress about links between the Trump campaign and Russia. And while he pushed back against GOP pressure for a special prosecutor to investigate the Clintons, he did not rule that out. And so we will go in depth on it all. Also, Donald Trump Jr. under fire over private messages between him and WikiLeaks. What's that about?
Later, we'll shift our focus on sexual harassment from Hollywood and showbiz to the very seat of our federal government, talking with an attorney who says that trying to report sexual harassment within the federal government can be a daunting, mostly frustrating endeavor. And remember the UCLA basketball players accused of shoplifting in China? What did the president promise the Chinese in exchange for their return to L.A.?
We begin with calls for a special prosecutor to investigate the Clintons. Attorney General Jeff Sessions was grilled on that by Ohio Republican Jim Jordan today.
We will use the proper standards, and that's what only thing I can tell you, Mr. Jordan.
Well, I appreciate that.
You can have your idea, but sometime we have to study what the facts are and to evaluate whether it meets the standard.
Well said. So let me ask you this. If, in fact,
counsel.
With us now is John Dean, who served as White House counsel to President Richard Nixon. John, welcome back to the show, by the way.
Pleasure. I also happened to have been counsel of that committee at one time.
Okay, so that puts you in a good position to answer this question. So here we are, only about, maybe a week or two after President Trump expressed his dismay that the Justice Department and Jeff Sessions were not looking into the Clintons, and now it looks like at least they're doing an investigation to see whether or not they want to hire a special counsel. Is this link something that should be troubling to Americans?
Well, it certainly looks like it's a politically motivated investigation, which is not the norm for criminal prosecutions or investigations. I'm hoping that the rank-and-file prosecutors in the Department of Justice are just going to turn this off. It's pretty trumped up at this point, to borrow a phrase.
Well, if it were to happen, I mean, as you're saying, it opens the door immediately to abuse of power claims. You know, you can't go after your political opponents like this. That's what other countries do, places that aren't the U.S.
It's a very much of a tin pot kind of attitude about how you deal with the criminal justice system. And the Department of Justice, you know, it would be a real change in the norms of the department to start initiating criminal investigations because a president wants it. That isn't the reason they do it. They generally are confronted with a violation of the law, and then they act on it.
Well, of course, you know something firsthand about Watergate. Before Watergate, was it or was it not, if not common, something that was not exactly extraordinary for a president to exert influence over the Justice Department before Watergate?
It was not the norm. This isn't to say that presidents haven't. I'm thinking back, for example, at Teapot Dome, where Calvin Coolidge, after Harding had died, did put some pressure on for some investigation. And Calvin Coolidge was not known to be the kind of guy to pressure anybody for anything. But anyway, it's not unheard of. Public response often prompts a president to call for an investigation. But with a political opponent, that's the exception. That's where you get into the area of banana republic thinking.
How do you view what AG Sessions said today? Because there are a lot of headlines out there saying that he really did dampen some of the hopes for a special counsel on the Clintons. But is the door still open? Because he did push back, but he didn't say it's not going to happen.
Well, he actually proved to be stronger than I thought he was going to be on that issue. I think he recognizes that it's really a dangerous precedent, and I think he's probably been advised that it would cause something of an uprising in the department that he is the head of. So I was delighted he pushed back to the degree he did and just didn't sort of collapse at the pressure the GOPs on the Judiciary Committee were putting on him.
But let me ask you something. Are we all making too much of the special counsel part of this? I mean, couldn't the Justice Department go ahead at the Attorney General's initiative
Absolutely.
And investigate the Clintons anyway?
Absolutely, they could. They could quietly be investigating the Clinton Foundation right now, and we would not even know it. That would be the normal way this would happen. You don't appoint a special prosecutor every time there's a high-profile person involved. That's the exception, and it happens because of generally conflicts like we have with the appointment of the special counsel here, or back in Watergate, where people in the administration had conflicting interests and loyalties, so you put somebody in who theoretically is an outsider and can look at it objectively. So, no, absolutely, the Department of Justice has a criminal division that is in this business. They have U.S. attorneys all over the country that are in this business. You don't appoint a special counsel. This is some sort of dream that the Republicans have to try to embarrass the Clintons or anybody else that disagrees with them.
It's John Dean, served as White House counsel to President Richard Nixon.
A reminder, you can hear a repeat of this program at 8 o'clock tonight in 5 minutes when KNX In Depth continues. A skeptical local congresswoman, well, she's just not buying what the attorney general is saying about Russia. You're listening to KNX In Depth with Mike Simpson. I'm Charles Feldman.
As we continue our discussion, reminder coming up after news and traffic at the bottom of the hour. We're going to turn our attention from sexual harassment in Hollywood to sexual harassment in the federal government and why many victims don't report it. And then, did President Trump make any promises to China to get the shoplifting charges against three UCLA basketball players dropped?
Right now, though, Attorney General Jeff Sessions testifying before the House Judiciary Committee. He says he did not mislead members of Congress about any time between Russia and the Trump campaign.
In all of my testimony, I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie.
L.A. Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass is on the committee.
My biggest takeaway is that the Attorney General is definitely defensive because there have been many examples now where he has contradicted himself on the record, especially when he has testified before the Senate. And so with regard to comments he's made about communications with Russians, he's been back and forth saying he doesn't recollect, but he doesn't seem to realize what his prior testimony has been.
Let me ask you if it's possible for you to give him the benefit of the doubt. He says, as he has said before, that it was a chaotic campaign. In many ways, he describes a campaign that was very unprofessional. Could it be that there were so many people coming and going, and even though there's a picture of him sitting, you know, at a table along with Papadopoulos as well as Donald Trump, could it be he just really didn't remember all this stuff?
Well, I would think that would have made sense several months ago, the first time he testifies, if the testimony was by surprise, but this has been many months now. And even if he didn't recollect in the moment, he certainly has had time to review what has happened, to have discussions with other people that were in the room. He understands the significance of this. So I could have given him a benefit of the doubt many months ago, but that makes no sense now.
Have the answers shifted to what you think is the truth now, or do you think there's still a lack of clarity?
Oh, I think he's still being evasive, and, you know, I understand it because I know that he is definitely trying to please the president. You know that when he has been forthright, he has been attacked by the president. So I think he's trying to do his job and also please the president, and I think that's a very difficult position to be in, especially with this president who has constantly changed his position and seems to have no allegiance to the truth.
So where does this all stand then? I mean, presumably the special counsel might get to the bottom of all of this, including any role, if any, that Jeff Sessions may have played in all of this. But if not, then it's a standoff, isn't it? I mean, Sessions says, I don't remember all these things, or it's not the way that you guys think it happened. Obviously, Democrats think otherwise. So where does this go?
Well, I think that what Mueller is doing will get to the bottom of it. And I think that we see the wagon circling around the Oval Office very clearly and getting very close. And so one of the things that I expect to happen in the near future is the indictment of Michael Flynn and his son. And it would be extremely hard for the president to say that Michael Flynn was just a volunteer. He was in the Oval Office. He was the National Security Advisor. He was a key confidant. And Jeff Sessions was right there as well. So I won't be surprised to see if those indictments come forward that people's stories might begin to change.
Let me shift a little bit and ask you for a comment on what we now understand is the Justice Department's position to investigate the possibility of another special prosecutor, special counsel, but this one to look into the Clintons, which is something that the president, of course, has been urging the Justice Department to do, has expressed his dismay that Jeff Sessions up till now has not done it. Your reaction to all of that?
Well, my reaction to that is that is an example of the Attorney General really trying to hang in there and please the president, who has not forgiven him for recusing himself. So if there can be a diversion to investigate the Clintons, and just think about how crazy that sounds right now, investigate them for what? We know that the president continues to be obsessed behind the Clintons and also behind the Obama administration. So I think that is Jeff Sessions trying to hang on to his job as Attorney General.
Do you think the AG backed away from it a little bit today? He did say, well, we need facts if we're going to do that. We can't just do it based on beliefs. Or do you think it could still be a possibility that he'd see through?
Well, let's see what the president tweets about it. Let's see if the president approves of his performance. So he might say that today, but if the president is critical of him, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him follow through and call a special investigator. And I think that's very sad at this point in time.
But I was under the impression that Jeff Sessions is supposed to recuse himself from anything to do with Russia, or I guess by extension, anything surrounding the election of Donald Trump. Wouldn't this be under that umbrella?
Well, absolutely it would be, but I'm sure that it will not be interpreted as that, because they will say that this happened before, this is about the Clintons. I think it'll take a little bit of gymnastics to try to figure out how to make this not connected to the election, but if he is being responsive to his boss, who is not happy with his performance, trust me, they will find a way to make this not connected to the election, completely independent, happened before, and an example of corruption from the Clintons.
L.A. Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass on the Judiciary Committee.
A reminder, you can hear a repeat of this program 8 o'clock tonight. You can also listen to our new podcast or stream the show live. Just download the radio.com app. Works on both Android and iPhones. Donald Trump Jr., tweets, WikiLeaks. Put them all together, and you have our next story when KNX In-Depth continues.
You're listening to KNX In-Depth, sponsored by your Southern California BMW Centers. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Mike Simpson.
And a reminder, after news and traffic at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with a Washington attorney as the House hears shocking stories about sexual harassment on Capitol Hill. And then President Trump helped get shoplifting charges against three UCLA basketball players dropped in China. What does the U.S. now owe the Chinese?
Right now, though, details coming out about private tweets between the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., and WikiLeaks, with us now Aaron Blake, senior political reporter who writes for the Washington Post political blog, The Fix. So, Aaron, for people who haven't gone through and read the back and forth, what are the significance of these conversations, if any?
Well, basically, this is a series of kind of intermittent messages between the WikiLeaks account and between Donald Trump Jr., in which the two of them discussed strategy, discussed the WikiLeaks documents, at times asked each other for information about various things. I think the most interesting messages here, perhaps, are the ones in which WikiLeaks asks Donald Trump Jr. to promote a link to the hacked emails that they were releasing. And 2 days later, Donald Trump Jr. did, in fact, tweet the same link that they had requested that he sent.
Are these exchanges, in your view, likely to be something that the special counsel Robert Mueller and his team looking at very carefully now, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know that for sure. I think that if anything, they kind of fill out the picture of members of the Trump campaign at least being willing to have conversations with somewhat unsavory characters. In the case of WikiLeaks, of course, you're talking about an organization that was the pass-through, basically, for the emails that the Russian government hacked from Democrats in the 2016 election. Our intelligence services basically believe that WikiLeaks is a front for the Russian government in a lot of ways. So I don't know that this is any kind of a smoking gun. I don't think that it is. But it does kind of fill out the picture a little bit as far as the people that the Trump campaign was talking to and the kinds of things that they were willing to at least hear about having a conversation about.
Where does candidate Trump, then candidate Trump, come into the picture? There is an exchange about tax returns, kind of along the lines of, hey, if you leak us some of that, then we could look like we're coming out with stuff from both sides of the campaigns.
Yeah, that was really interesting. And actually, Donald Trump Jr. never responded to that particular message. There were a lot of messages in here which one side or the other didn't respond to. There were sometimes a couple weeks between messages in this exchange. So, you know, it doesn't suggest a huge degree of coordination between the two sides, but it certainly indicated a willingness to have a conversation. WikiLeaks would propose things and leave it to Trump Jr. to respond to them. And Trump Jr., in one case, asked for information about a potential document dump that he had heard was coming from WikiLeaks. He also didn't get a response to that question. So, you know, not a huge degree of coordination, but certainly there was some interest from both sides in that relationship.
Well, this would seem to show at least a degree of collusion between Donald Trump Jr. and WikiLeaks. Does it bring us any closer to showing collusion with Russians?
I don't think necessarily that this anything obtained in these messages shows a crime being committed. I do think they just kind of fill out the picture of what the campaign was willing to do or willing to have a conversation about. You know, WikiLeaks is certainly an objectionable organization to many people in the United States government because of their history of disseminating government documents, some of them classified. That the government is not a fan of WikiLeaks, and the fact that the Trump campaign was willing to talk to them, I think, is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. Of course, the president made no secret of his affinity for WikiLeaks during the campaign. He even said a few times that he loved WikiLeaks when it was releasing the Democrats' documents.
Aaron Blake, senior political reporter, writes for The Washington Post's political blog, The Fix.
Why is it so difficult to report sexual harassment in the federal government? We are going to look at that when KNX In Depth continues. You're listening to KNX In Depth with Mike Simpson. I'm Charles Feldman.
Seems every day there's a new allegation of sexual harassment against somebody in power in Hollywood. Well, today the allegations aimed at people in even more power, some cases lawmakers on Capitol Hill, our federal government.
One theme of today's hearing by a House committee is how difficult it is to report sexual harassment with cumbersome procedures that must be followed exactly. With us now is Washington attorney Deborah Katz, who specializes in whistleblower and sexual harassment cases. So why all of these rules and how cumbersome is it?
Well, these rules are really a remnant of an age before the laws applied to Congress. After the Packwood hearings, after 10 women came forward with allegations of sexual harassment against Senator Packwood, Congress was finally embarrassed enough to say, okay, we're going to pass a law that makes sexual harassment and other discrimination laws apply to us. And that law is called the Congressional Accountability Act. And they set up this office, the Office of Compliance, that is designed to receive complaints. But the entire structure of this process is really tilted toward the members because it puts all these requirements on employees to go through mandatory counseling procedures, mandatory mediation processes, and while maintaining confidentiality throughout that entire period. So unlike any other victim of sexual harassment in the private sector or at other federal agencies, if you're sexually harassed at Congress, you have to go from mandatory counseling for a 30-day period, then you have to go through a cooling-off period before you can go to mandatory mediation. And that process is generally heavy-handed. People we have represented have found that process to be re-traumatizing. It is a very abusive process. And during that time, they could be stuck in their congressional offices, very isolated, and unable to talk to anybody. It's a very abusive, heavy-handed process. And it is all designed to protect the member from these issues coming out before legislative counsel can try to structure, again, a confidential settlement.
Yeah, so the cooling off period, I mean, that doesn't help the victim. And you mentioned it is all confidential, so you can't even get anybody to back you up, corroborate your claims.
That's correct. I mean, it's worse than that. It's you can't ask family members to provide support. You can't speak to a therapist under the way that they have this thing structured. It is just very, very heavy-handed. And people who have resources can bring in counsel, but those who don't have resources are being forced into the system that favors members of Congress, and they are very represented by legislative counsel who can be quite aggressive in making people feel that they have no recourse.
And you don't have the option of going to D.C. police?
Well, you always have the option of going to D.C. police, but for reasons that most people don't like to report sexual harassment and sexual assault, it's even more so when you're dealing with members of Congress who are very powerful, and people fear not only the normal retaliation that victims of harassment feel in most workplaces, but they feel that they'll never work again in politics. They feel a disloyalty to their party, and people choose to just submit to really egregious abuse rather than reporting.
So they're going to put training in place, and a lot of people are surprised there wasn't training already since so many of us at our jobs have to go through it. But are there any efforts to change this overall process for making complaints and claims?
Yes, I think that was the subject of today's hearings, how completely skewed this process is toward members of Congress. I mean, training is good, but training can be a check-the-box exercise. The Office of Compliance has always offered training to each congressional office, and very few offices chose to do the training. The training, in fact, is online training, and it's really a check-the-box exercise. The EEOC last year did a very comprehensive report about sexual harassment in the workplace and actually concluded that that kind of check-the-box exercise of online sexual harassment training actually increases the amount of sexual harassment that occurs in the workplace, because it teaches people what behavior is bad but not bad enough to be actionable. So if we're really going to address this problem, members of Congress need to undergo robust training, as do their chiefs of staff, and people need to be alerted to their legal rights. Right now, most people in Congress couldn't find the Office of Compliance if you gave them a GPS system.
Washington attorney Deborah Katz specializes in whistleblower and sexual harassment cases.
A reminder, you can hear a repeat of this program at 8 o'clock tonight. You can also now listen to our new podcast. Just download the radio.com app. It works on iPhone or Android. In 5 minutes, when KNX In-Depth continues, what do you think President Trump had to promise China's president in order to get shoplifting charges against 3 UCLA basketball players dropped?
You're listening to KNX In-Depth, sponsored by your Southern California BMW Centers. I'm Mike Simpson, along with Charles Feldman.
President Trump says he asked China's president to intervene to help the 3 UCLA basketball players who were accused in China of shoplifting sunglasses from a Louis Vuitton store near their hotel. So with us now is Mark Gannis, sports consultant and president of Chicago-based Sports Corp, who has done business in China for more than a decade. Mark, what do you think, if anything, the president had to give up in order to convince the Chinese to let these youngsters go?
The short answer is a favor to be called, to be named later. This is one of those things where when it gets to this level with the Chinese leadership or leadership that in a country that's governed like China, this is never free. You ask for a favor. The favor is granted. When President Xi, if he ever asks for a favor from President Trump, he will be expected to perform just as President Xi did.
So it's just like any other deal, basically. You know you owe me, and so maybe some Chinese company down the line gets in trouble here, or some Chinese citizen, and then they get off the hook.
You got it. And it'll be a situation that will, you know, may have our media and some people up in arms. How could this happen? How could you let it happen? And people will should then be reminded that that's exactly what President Trump asked President Xi to do, and President Xi came through.
Some, of course, might argue that that's just good politics, no?
Well, there is no doubt that one of the functions of a State Department and embassies in countries is to help get citizens of the United States released if they're taken into custody. So it is standard operating procedure. Let's not remember there were lots of people who've been held in custody around the world where this has not happened. The players were very fortuitous that President Trump happened to be in China at the same time meeting with President Xi. I can't imagine him actually making a call to President Xi requesting this if they weren't with each other at the time.
And they're not following the other team members that far behind. I mean, they could have been on house arrest for much, much longer than this.
Absolutely. If you understand the Chinese system and how the police work, and we do, because we've been doing business for over a decade in China, if they feel that they have the evidence, and they said they had videotape, they wouldn't have arrested them if they didn't, by the way, have clear evidence. They don't do that to foreigners. It could have very well been that they would have had to stay in China with surrendered passports until the total completion of the investigation and a dissolution of the matter. And that could take weeks, could take months.
So this is actually a big deal for President Trump to get the president or the bureaucracy anyway in China to release these three is pretty significant.
This is a big deal. If people think it is not, they are mistaken. This is a big deal. And once President Trump asked President Xi to do it, Xi was almost obligated to fulfill. And in China, if President Xi says you're going to release this person, that's what you do. So this was a big deal. And this is something that President Trump now knows that he owes President Xi a favor down the road.
We have this athletics department press conference set for tomorrow. What does this look like? Because now in terms of punishment, it's up to the school.
It's a terrible situation, guys. This is this is embarrassing for UCLA, the Pac-12. It's embarrassing for Americans, quite frankly. I mean, these guys were guests, they're visitors, being treated so well, and then they do something like this. It's good that they're out of there. It's good for themselves that they've, you know, for their lives and their families that they're able to get home. But let's not diminish this. This is actually a pretty big deal.
Should they be kicked off the team?
You know, one would think they'd have at least be suspended for violating team rules and for bringing such shame onto the UCLA Bruins basketball team.
Well, for causing an international incident, let's be frank. I mean,
And it is. Think about it. This turned into an international incident. It's not good for Alibaba either, who were the hosts. That's why they were in Hangzhou. They were there because Alibaba's headquartered there. They weren't playing there, and Alibaba was hosting it as part of a deal they have with the Pac-12. It will also cast some doubt for future kinds of cultural exchanges that occur, whether they're athletic or educational. This is not a good situation, and it deserves some attention.
Mark Gannis, sports consultant, president of Chicago-based Sports Corp, which has done business in China for more than a decade.
A reminder, you can hear a repeat of this program at 8 o'clock tonight, but coming up next, some of the stories you may have missed, but we did not. You're listening to KNX In Depth with Mike Simpson. I'm Charles Feldman.
Well, forget about unlocking your smartphone with your fingerprint or your face. The next new thing may be your sweat. What? Researcher at the University at Albany in New York says using sweat to unlock your phone much better than other methods because the amino acids in sweat, one of a kind. And he says sweat is more difficult to hack than either fingerprints or facial recognition unless they're following you around at the gym. Your phone, though, may be wet a lot.
I'm not buying that phone. Thanksgiving, just about here. And for those who worry about overeating, the folks who make stovetop stuffing have an idea. Basically, don't worry how much turkey you shove down. Just buy a pair of their special stovetop stuffing pants with an elastic waistband. I'm not making this up. They are unisex. They cost about $20. And the pants feature images of stuffing on the waistband.
Just bring them for everyone who's at the table. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Mike Simpson. Thanks for joining us here on KNX In Depth. A reminder, repeat of the broadcast 8 o'clock tonight. Back with more In Depth tomorrow at 1. And you can listen to the podcast. It's on the radio.com app. CBS News is next.